Conversations with Leaders on Tremendous Life Radio, providing some of today's most influential and inspiring leaders a platform to share their stories of growing up, what happened, and what they're doing today. Now, here's your host, Todd Weaver.
Welcome, everybody, to Tremendous Life Radio. Thank you so much for tuning in. We got one heck of a show lined up for you tonight. We have Mr. Doug Wagner. Doug is a fellow Go-Giver coach and speaker, an entrepreneur, and a writer. He's the president and co-founder of Sunwapta Solutions and a contributor for entrepreneur.com and the Good Men Project. Doug, thank you so much for joining us on Tremendous Life Radio.
You're more than welcome.
We've really been looking forward to having you for a long time. You seem like you're a funny guy and you're pretty right with yourself. You know, we had some technical difficulties. I believe you called it a wardrobe malfunction. So I love that. So thanks a lot for bearing with us and being here. I want to get started right away. If we can, let's, you know, we want to get to know you. You've listened to some of the shows, you know, we do here. Talk about some of your early years and your formidable years or whatever you want to call it. What was going on with you real young?
Really young. When I look back and I kind of reflect on, you know, some of the things that make you who you are, I think one of the biggest things that had an impact on me early in life was the fact that my father was in the military and we moved around about every three, four years, we'd be in a new place. And of course, everybody else is doing the same thing. So I end up changing friends out quite a bit. And so when you first move to a location, you have some alone time before you make friends, and then some of your friends move away or whatever, and you have to do the same again. So ends up meaning, I guess, that I kind of got into reading and stuff like that quite early and learned a lot to be both independent yet still go out there and make friends and that sort of thing.
You know, that's interesting. I didn't know that about you. There's probably a whole lot I don't know about you, and that's, I'm looking forward to it. But I, you know, some of the guests that have been on the show and talk about growing up in a, you know, a military household, it seems like it's different for a lot of different people, but the moving around part, that it's got to be hard trying to find yourself as a young man anyway. And then that moving around, how, I mean, was that lonely for you or were you kind of like a chameleon or can you describe any of that?
Well, for me, you know, back when I was young, I was probably didn't start out terribly shy, but as I got older, I got into sort of a little bit more quiet and introspective shy phase. And so it did take a while. I mean, once I got into, you know, you get into around the 15, 16 range, it starts getting a little bit harder to make friends quickly. I was no longer living on the base, so I wasn't around people who were in the same boat. So it would take, you know, anywhere from 4 to 6 months before you started really connecting with people locally and getting invited to things and stuff like that. So there is that kind of, you know, I'm not the type of person who just walks in and suddenly has 30 or 40 friends. I have usually a fairly good set of close friends and then a large circle of acquaintances.
Hmm. Was that, were you an only child or did you have siblings?
I had a sister, or have a sister. I shouldn't say had a sister. She's still alive.
You know, it's wild when I listen to it, and it's interesting because you seem like you're so outgoing and from, you know, from social things and, you know, a lot of the writing that you do, and you seem awful witty and funny and quick. I can hardly picture you as an introverted, shy, quiet young man.
Well, you should have seen me when I was finishing high school, and my father basically told me that he wasn't going to pay for university, and I better find a job. And then he suggested that I go into the regular officer training plan and have them pay for my education. So to humor him, I actually applied, and I didn't really think I'd get accepted. And suddenly, at the end of it, I got accepted, and it was like, oh no, now what do? I'm kind of caught in a bind now. So being the non-quitter kind of personality, I ended up going through with it. And so, you know, sort of showed up at basic training for the summer right out of high school and suddenly thrown into an environment where you're bunking with 40 people all at once and you're getting yelled at all day long. It's quite a shock and quite a growing experience very, very quickly. So I think that pulled me out of it after a few years in the military there to really get past that that shy phase, I guess.
Well, and thank you for that, Doug. I'm chuckling as I'm listening. I guess you learned early on not to humor your father so much, huh?
Yeah. Well, we, you know, of course, you know, being a young teen, he's quite rebellious, and I always was challenging him in terms of, you know, father knows best kind of stuff, and I call him out on quite a few things where it was like, actually, that's not true. so he didn't really appreciate that, but he did kind of push me to get out and do something, and it ultimately was my choice. But again, you know, it was just one of those things like, okay, well, I'm accepted. I really don't have any other plans, so I'll give it a shot. Yeah. And then suddenly 12 years later, before I was actually getting out of the military. So,
wow. Hey, when you mentioned that during some of those years and moving around that you were kind of introspective and you started reading a lot of books. Is that, I mean, we'll get back to that, but what did you want to be when you grew up or when you were reading those books? Did you have an early dream or were you kind of just winging it?
Well, I was kind of reading a lot of science fiction and fantasy kind of books, so there wasn't a lot of occupations that seemed realistic coming out of that, for sure. But, you know, I kind of had this idea that I should, you know, I was really good in school early on, and I kind of thought, okay, well, you know, I'm either going to go into science or I'm going to become an engineer or something like that. So that's kind of what I ended up doing in university years. I ended up taking electrical engineering. That was actually quite a shocker for me because first 2 years were fine, and then we got into the third year, and it was kind of a funny program in Nova Scotia. It was actually a five-year program, and they had two years in a preparatory school where you took your basic engineering stuff. And then they had 3 years in the Technical University of Nova Scotia. And, of course, you know, the first year of university, they're weeding out the people who really shouldn't be in the engineering program. And then when they hit the second one, they were weeding out the people who really weren't right for being electrical engineers. And again, that was a big shock for me because I actually, for the first time in my life, actually failed some exams and midterms and stuff like that, and I was kind of panicking at that particular juncture. And I also realized by the end of it that electrical engineering really wasn't my thing. It's one of those choices you make coming out of school, not knowing really who you are or what you should do. But it turns out I'm actually quite a visual person, and electrical engineering is sort of all a bunch of mathematical formulas interacting with each other. And, you know, it takes a certain type of mindset to be able to thrive and enjoy that. So realized it wasn't quite me and ended up trying other things later in life.
And thank you, Doug. You mentioned that for the first time in your life, you kind of struggled as far as you failed almost, I think you said. So what, describe that. I mean, what, you could have just quit right then or like folded. How'd you work through that? Can you even describe that today?
Yeah. Well, I mean, it was the same when I was in basic training. Like, you know, I was still quite shy, softly spoken, and it came my turn to lead the troop for a few days or the platoon for a few days and get everybody and organize everybody. And everybody's really startled when all of a sudden I was belting out all the commands and stuff like that because I'd been so quiet up until that point.
Yeah.
And it was kind of the same in university. It was a little bit of a shock that, well, I mean, to be fair, I mean, one of the exams, the guy was covering electromagnetic theory, and we hadn't even taken the math yet in regular classes, math classes. So it was a little bit hard, and I think the failure rate was about 80% on that particular midterm. So it wasn't like I was in the only one in that boat, but it was a real shock to my ego. But what it really came down to is I learned that I really have something in me that doesn't let me quit. And sometimes that's actually detrimental. Mm. Sometimes you actually probably should just go, maybe I should do something different. But I have this tendency to stick with it, even though it might not be totally the right thing or whatever. So,
well, it's wild that you recognize that. And thanks for sharing that. I can see, too, how listening to you that it sometimes maybe can be detrimental. But I believe in a lot of ways for you and for me that that never quit attitude is typically usually pretty useful to you and to, you know, the people around you, the people you serve. That's just, I guess, my opinion. But
for sure.
Tell us about after university. I mean, now did somebody tell you, hey, you got to go get a real job, or what was going on in your heart? What kind of desire did you have, or were you still just finding your way?
So after the 5 years of university, I basically owed the military 5 years of service, or I'd have to basically pay for a buyout mm-hmm. of my education. And so I did the 5 years, and then it kind of led to a couple extra years. And so the first, you know, job I had coming out of all the training programs and stuff like that was actually working in National Defense Headquarters in the computer side of things. So I was actually running a bunch of projects where essentially we're in procurement and project management. And so because of the way the military works and because of the way the types of computer systems they needed, sometimes they were very, very expensive. So here I was, you know, fresh out of school, young lieutenant in the military, and I had a project budget 1 year of a couple million dollars that I was responsible for. So it wasn't like I was like the only one, but with, you know, the authority or whatever, there was certainly a big chain of command above me. But still, to be managing that at a very young age was kind of eye-opening, and to see it sort of from that other perspective. And then I ended up going out to an actual base after that in Winnipeg, and there I was actually had about 50 people working for me. Of course, the reality is in the military, it's the senior non-commissioned officers that are actually sort of running the day-to-day, and you as the officer just kind of manage it all and make sure it's all heading in the right direction. And so it's not like fresh out of school, you're just all of a sudden managing 50 people. And so, but it was a very big learning experience. And then there I also had the opportunity, because of my connections back to my first job in the military, there was how government budgets typically work is near the end of the year, if they haven't spent all their money, they try and find projects that can get done quickly so that they don't lose that budget. And so they had some money and they wanted to build out networks on the Winnipeg base, and I actually got that project because of that prior connection and the faith that they had that I could actually pull off the project. So and then
I'm sorry, I interrupted. Go ahead, Doug.
Yeah, that was the sort of the last big project I did just as I was getting out of the military, because they were downsizing at that time. They offered some packages, and I was due for a posting, and I was like, well, I'm kind of tired of this moving around thing. Maybe I'll go somewhere and stay there for a while. So I did that. Mm-hmm.
It's wild when I'm listening to you. I hear with a lot of guests, and you, I would guess, didn't know it at the time, but your story, kind of those early and those experiences you're describing now really serve you in what you do today. But you helped me with this. You didn't really know that was going to be the case, right? We can't see into the future.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, like you say, I'm a firm believer that your past shapes where you are today. And if you change mm-hmm. very much significantly about it, you won't end up in the same place. So you don't get to pick and choose which parts of your past that you felt you didn't appreciate or whatever. You sort of end up where you are because of all those little choices. And sometimes it's the microscopic choices that you make that end up having the most impact later on as well. So
I got to ask this. It came to me as I'm listening to you. how did you always have like a discipline inside of you and a drive, or were there times, how did you avoid shiny objects or distractions, or were you driven that hard? Explain that, please.
Shiny objects, yeah. I mean, the curse of the entrepreneur and the visionary type of mindset is that, of course, we have so many different ideas that we don't want to focus in on one particular one for very long.
Mm-hmm.
And that's actually something that I found that was very easy for me to get into, is that let's do this, let's try that, let's try this, let's try that. But I realized that if I actually wanted to get any particular place and actually get good at something and actually be able to make a difference, you actually have to focus on things until they're complete to a certain degree, and at least you can hand them off to somebody else to now run with. And I think that's the real secret of being an entrepreneur, not being able to start lots and lots of things. I still see a lot of starting entrepreneurs that, and I call them starting entrepreneurs, even though some of them have been doing them for 15, 20 years, they'll say, you know, I have 10 different businesses, and I do this, and I do that, and I do this. And it's like, well, how well do you do any one of them? You're kind of scattering all your efforts. And that's one thing I kind of realized, is that before you can do all the grandiose big plans you have in your head, you have to get the basics and the foundations in place.
Well, now, with listening to you describe that, it sounds like you intuitively kind of knew that, or learned, you know, accepted that, or came to that belief pretty early on. Is that, I mean, again, looking back on that, did you know that you were focused like that? Or, I mean, it's easier to look back now and then describe it, but, you know, I believe, but where do you think that came from?
Well, I always had sort of, I think this came back to a question that I didn't finish answering, that internal drive. I mean, a lot of people think, you know, academically, that there are people who are just smart and people who aren't smart, and that's that. But, I mean, the reality is I actually worked fairly hard at school all the way through. It wasn't like I kind of sloughed off. And when I was back in junior high school, you know, I joined the band program, and I was one of the few people who practiced regularly. So even though I started the program a year behind everybody, within, I think, 2 years, I was moved up from, you know, fourth trumpet to first trumpet.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that just comes from having the discipline and actually liking what you're doing and realizing that to get good at anything, you actually need to put some effort into it.
Hmm. Well, having that entrepreneurial spirit then after the military, after school, after the military, what'd you do?
So after the military, actually, we ended up working for a big IT company. It was at that time, it was System House, I believe. And then they got acquired by a big telecom company. And then they got acquired by, I think it was EDS at the time. And so we kind of went through all of these transitions. And when I was there, I got hired in as a technical role. And I always kind of thought, you know, technical role is not really where I should be. I should be in a leadership role or something like that. And it was actually pretty funny, because one of my managers back then actually, in my annual review, told me I was showing too much leadership in the group. And I was baffled, because in the military, you always got told you didn't have enough leadership. Right? And I don't think I've ever heard somebody being told in the military that they had too much leadership. But at the time, there was so much transition, and every time they did downsizing, it was always the management ranks that got slaughtered, as you will. And a lot of it was just political, right? A new manager would come in, and they'd put all their friends in place and rehire everybody and think that was going to change things. And then I also didn't like the bureaucracy that was going on there. So if I look at how I got into being an entrepreneur, it was that frustration with not being able to make any kind of a difference in the organization I was in. Hmm. So me and two other people that I was working with at the time decided to form our own company.
Wow, that's huge. Did you, And at this time, the discomfort is the way I heard you describe it, kind of led you to that calling to follow that. But also, did you just do that, or did you kind of seek out counsel before you made those decisions? Did you read another book? Did you go to therapy, or did you just go for it?
Well, it's one of therapy. Yeah, that comes after you become an entrepreneur, not before. So yeah, essentially, we were kind of all a little bit frustrated. We were doing some good work, and it wasn't being appreciated. And we were basically being told to cease and desist that work. People in headquarters are working on it, and they'll be done in 2 years. And we'd already solved the problem. And I'm not saying it was as elegant as their solution was going to be, but it was there and it worked and it met the client's needs at the time. But this was just as the dot-com run-up was happening. And, you know, everybody who was out there building stuff, software, was making lots of money. And we didn't really have any brilliant ideas for, you know, a dot-com play and raising money or anything like that. But we just thought, you know, if we go out there and we provide good service and we're really good at what we do and add value to our customers, then we'll find lots of business. And so we went out, started the business, and we all actually quit on the very same day. We sent our boss a note, and it was a big company. I wouldn't recommend, if you're working for a small business, that you do that sort of thing, because you could kind of kill their business. But this is a big company. They didn't really miss us for very long. But it was actually pretty funny, because the director of the outsourcing center called us into his office about 2 days after we had given our resignation notice, and we thought he was going to yell at us or something like that, right? Because we thought, okay, well, maybe they're more upset about this than we thought. And so we go into his office, and he's like, "So what do you got going? Do you need any investors?" So it was actually pretty funny. It was like, no, we're just planning on going out and doing some consulting, but if we do something where we need some investment, we'll be sure to give you a call. So.
But hey, that had to help you. That had to help you, though, right? I kind of reaffirmed it, or did it not, that maybe, you know, maybe we're doing the right thing here. Maybe, or did you have any effect? I mean,
it comes to For me, I kind of looked at it and went, yeah, I'm taking a risk. I'm doing things, but I have some faith in my ability. And even though at times I have sort of a negative, what could go wrong kind of way of looking at things, most of the times I look at things and I'm actually, if you dig deep, I'm kind of optimistic that somehow things are going to work out, that somehow if we work hard enough, if we do this, we do that, they're just going to work out. And I guess that's what Michael Gerber talks about in The Entrepreneurial Seizure or whatever. And it's like, how hard can it be? We're really good at what we do, so running a business can't be that big of a deal.
I love it. So I want to skip ahead just for a second. So did you ever ask that guy for investment?
No, we didn't.
You handled it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well, so now there you are. You're consulting with two guys that were also kind of, for lack of a better term, disgruntled where you were. How did that go? And what did you do next? And what was going on? Really, what I'm getting at, Doug, here is, what was going on inside of you, like in your heart? Did you have anything tugging on you? And because I ask you this, because I know that you have really bought into the go-giver philosophy. So can you recognize any of that back then, or did you know what was happening inside of you?
I didn't really recognize it as a technique or a philosophy or anything like that. I just knew that we needed to go out there and we needed to do stuff that would be valuable to our clients. And we actually had lined up our very first client before we even formed the company. And so we had at least one small project on the go. And then about 8 months into it, well, actually it wasn't even quite 8 months, 6 months into it, we got a call from one of my business partners, happened to be doing a bunch of volunteer work in his community. And he actually got approached by a guy who was appreciative of that fact and knew that we had started a business. And so he asked us to potentially bid on some work. And so we ended up, after meeting him, the friend or whatever that was in this big company, it was a big HR consulting firm, and he actually brought in another senior person in that firm, and they evaluated us, and we actually ended up getting a few projects out of them, and then one thing led to another, and we've been working with them for about 15 years now.
Hey, that's funny. Imagine that. One of your partners serving the community, and it kind of came to you. I love it. That's great. Now, I don't know, how long ago was it? Give us a timeline, just roughly, so I know where we are.
That was in the year 2000. Mm-hmm. Year 2000. So that was about 15 years ago that we started the business.
Okay, so we want to get to, or I certainly am interested in, I'm interested in you, Doug, but I'm interested in a lot of things. So what I want to get to, how Manifast came about and what, and Sunwapta Solutions, or is Sunwapta Solutions that business?
So the Sunwapta Solutions is actually the business we started right off the bat. You know, of course, you're always trying to, we probably, in hindsight, spent a way too much time worrying about what name we were going to call our business and our logos and all those sorts of things. But we were doing a lot of research into what our names meant and trying to come up with something clever that also wasn't taken on the internet and all those kinds of things, which is actually a pretty big challenge.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was looking at some maps of different mountains and rivers and all that in the region, and I found that there was a waterfall and a glacier and a river called Sunwapta. And I'd actually been there. It's in Jasper National Park in the Rockies here in Canada. And when I found out that the word actually meant turbulent waters, it was like, okay, well, that's kind of cool, because, you know, Douglas is a dark river, and Glen is kind of a little river valley kind of thing, or a valley. And my other partner, his first name is Alnur, which is the light. And so the fact that there's sun in the name appealed to him. So we kind of picked that name and we ran forward with it.
And I'm, you know, that, thank you for that. I've been interested in that, and the time I've known you, I've never asked the question, and I was afraid I was going to feel stupid. I don't feel quite so bad now. So, but it is funny that you look back, you know, again, in hindsight, always being able to look back, I think through grace. And that's, you know, you said you might've spent more time than you would have had to on all those things, but I guess you really didn't, because if you could have done it sooner, you probably would have. So
yeah,
as that's moving forward, what's going on in your mind and with those partners, who I imagine are still your partners today? What's going on in your life, in your heart, in your because you're a creative soul. What was going on through those years?
So basically, you know, after doing that and working with a very big client, what ends up happening when you kind of land a big client early on in your life as an entrepreneur is you start having things a little bit easier than maybe you should have, or don't necessarily want to use that should have word, but meaning that if you had to struggle more early on, you probably would have thought about a few other things. And one of the things we didn't do enough work on was finding other clients, because they were taking so much of our time and effort. And every time that we hired a new staff member or two, they would come along and give us more project work. But after a few years of that, we went, okay, we really have to diversify. We have a few small clients and we have one really big one. And so we started going out into the marketplace. And this is when we kind of realized that, you know, the build it and they will come mentality of, you know, you do good work and the word of mouth will carry you forward. You really have to know the marketing and sales part, and we didn't really truly understand that early enough. I mean, we were out there doing it, we were the whole bit, but we didn't really master it until much later. And so we were out trying to find some of that consulting work, and then things like 9/11 happened, the dot-com meltdown happened, all those sorts of things that made it a little bit more challenging. And then, of course, you know, Calgary is an oil and gas town, so the price of oil really impacts the economy here. And it just takes a long time to find more big clients like that. And so one of the things I realized at that point, that my primary role had to shift. It had to shift from being the person who did the work, who was very good technically, could manage projects, to somebody who could build a business and really understood sales and marketing and all the other aspects of a business. So I started digging into all that stuff. And then at the same time, that really big client, their U.S. operation, noticed us, and they kind of came to us with some projects that sort of distracted us from that diversifying thing, because they basically said, okay, plan on hiring 50 more developers because we're going to be building out this whole new capability and we want you to be the technical team. And we were doing all this kind of stuff. And then, of course, there was some political stuff that happened. And that person didn't win the internal and political battle, we'll say, and they actually got shut down. And so all that whole thing, and we're really lucky, because if had we actually grown and hired all those people, we would have been in big trouble, but we would only just started that planning phase, and so we didn't really have to let anybody go or anything like that. So I was kind of fortunate there. But then I came back to it, and that really, really woke me up, and I kind of went, okay, I really have to master this business side of things. And so I literally read lots and lots of books, you know, did the start doing the online webinars and courses and all those sorts of things. And then I realized I really, really liked that side of things. I liked figuring out why certain businesses struggle, why other ones thrive. What is the mindset behind it? What is culture? What are core values? You know, what is the psychology behind it all? And so once that sort of bug got planted in me, I that's when the manifest idea was kind of started germinating. Because we also realized that we wanted something that wasn't cyclical like all the other software, big software development projects that we're kind of doing, where, you know, if the economy takes a dive, people stop spending money. So we wanted to go more into a subscription model. We wanted to build some software that would help businesses actually focus on working on the business, all the strategy, you know, attracting and retaining dream clients and creating high-performing teams and engaging those teams in building the business better and more efficient, making it more efficient so everybody could have more profit. Some of that profit could go back to employees and everybody be highly engaged. And so the first thing we did was, of course, being software guys, we built software. And the problem with that, of course, is that not that the software is a bad idea, is that I didn't realize at that time, or hadn't fully realized at that time, that to change how business owners were running their business is actually changing their habits. And that is harder to do than giving them a piece of software, no matter how good the software is. So at that time, we also realized that we needed to do some training and coaching and consulting to go along with that. And as we've pursued that more, we're now focusing on that even more so, and the software is now just a tool to enable all that to happen. So that's kind of how it all shaped up.
Thank you, Doug. It's amazing. And it almost seems like it kind of just, coincidence, or it just happened. But I know that you were showing up and paying attention and working hard through all those things, as I'm sure your partners were too.
Exactly.
But being flexible enough and being open to change, that's a skill or a gift or whatever the word may be. Is that correct?
Yeah, I mean, there's two things that I kind of really learned when I started the business. One thing I really learned early was that before that, you know, I'd kind of taken things personally when people weren't happy or you were being critical or whatever. But when you get into a business situation, you can't let what your clients say to you go too personal. Otherwise, you'll fire them all and you won't have any clients, right? So which isn't a good thing. So you have to kind of learn to let it go, mm-hmm. and look at the lessons that they're kind of telling you that you kind of wouldn't be open to hearing before that. So yes, some clients are kind of a little rougher around the edges and are kind of a little bit mean in how they deal with you, but there's still probably something to be learned in that whole process. And so really, that point, it was just learning to take that and then figure out what it meant and what we had to do different and those sorts of things, and really not getting as upset about it.
What about, go ahead, please.
The second part is really around, once we got into the software idea that we build the software, I realized that one of the things we had to do was know when a strategy wasn't working exactly like we planned on working it. So you have a great idea, you think it's going to work, you get some initial feedback, people all go, yeah, that's cool. But the reality is what you think the market wants and what it actually will pay for might be two different things. And so we've done a number of, quick strategy shifts, and it's not a total difference. I mean, our mission, and this is the really neat part, is because of the way we're now thinking, our mission really hasn't shifted, but how we're accomplishing the mission keeps shifting.
Well, and this is kind of a personal question too, but I've been dying to ask you. So when, through all this, can you tell me when you heard of The Go-Giver, or when did you read the book, or did you buy into it? I'm asking you multiple questions at once, but where did that, it sounds like you had that value based in you from almost the beginning, but I don't know about the servanthood piece or putting it all together. Tell us about how you bought into the Go-Giver philosophy.
So the Go-Giver all came about. I have to give almost 100% of the credit to social media, because, I got onto, I think it was Twitter at the time, and I just started following a few people and that sort of thing. I can't remember if I must have followed somebody, and then Bob Berg, for some reason, followed me, or I followed him. And then it was kind of like, well, what's this Go-Giver thing? And I saw it a few times, and then eventually I got curious enough that I went out and actually got the book, and I read it, and it was like, okay, this is exactly how I believe sales and business should work, and yet that isn't what I'm always hearing. I'm always hearing about cutthroat and closing the deal and the 99 ways to close and all these sorts of things, and it really, really resonated with how I believed you could operate in terms of, providing value, treating people well, not treating business as a scarcity kind of a mentality, but an abundance kind of mentality. There were just so many aspects of it, and I'm still learning like crazy. But at some point I decided I would, after reading a couple of the books, I would go to the Go-Giver conference in Florida. And at that time, they offered the Success Accelerator. A number of the coaches were doing it as part of the bundle for attending the conference. And so I ended up meeting Bill Ellis through that. Mm-hmm. And he was the first Go-Giver coach that I actually worked with. And we went through the Success Accelerator. And then when I actually got to Florida, because of social media and because of the Success Accelerator, I actually knew a few of the people that were at the conference. So, that was kind of my first real experience on the power of social media and the internet in terms of building relationships that later get stronger. And then after that conference, I had a few personal things that happened. I had my a very close dog that I had. He passed away while I was at the conference, sort of in the middle of it. So I kind of wrote a few blog posts about that a few months later. But anyways, so after some thinking about it, I decided that I would become a certified Go-Giver coach, and did that. And then, of course, part of that is at that time you got to work with Dixie Gillespie, and that was really cool to get that Success Accelerator from yet another perspective. And, I still... value all the relationships I've gotten through that, and then the pleasure of working and getting to listen to Bob Berg and interact with Bob Berg and that group on those weekly calls. That was amazing. So, yeah, that's all kind of how it came together. And
yeah. Hey, well, thank you. Thanks for sharing that, because it is kind of a personal question, you know. And you know, I want, because it seems to me that, and this isn't a call about Bob Berg or the Go-Giver, it's about Doug Wagner. But you know, what makes you you, and how it might change or evolve, it's always very interesting for us. And there had to be something going on, I would guess, in your heart early on. It was kind of like the way you were maybe already living or showing up in your life and your business all one. Is that correct?
Yeah, it just resonated on so many levels. Mm-hmm. And it was actually, there was one part of the Go-Giver that really kind of hit at home for me. And it was a part that I didn't find a lot of other people really focusing on at that time. And it was sort of towards the end where Joe and Rachel and the other guy, I forget his name, went off and formed a company and actually went off and became, you know, partners and worked together. And at that point, it was kind of that really resonated, because that was kind of what I wanted to do at around that same time. I can't remember which came first, but going out there and actually working with a lot of other people to be able to provide a service. And it doesn't matter whether we're actually part of the same company or we just have a really strong, good working relationship, but just that idea that there's abundance out there, we can all work together and create bigger and better things, and we don't always have to do it all by ourselves. There's just so much and so much power out of that particular lesson for me.
Thank you, Doug, and thanks for your candor. The Manifest Business Success System. Do you want to just talk about that briefly? I mean, the show is about you, but I want to know how that really brings about your core values, and what is it that you offer, and is it for small business or large or for what? Explain that, please.
Sure. Again, you know, maybe it was how I perceived the really big businesses, but I kind of looked at it and I went, where can we make a difference in the world? And yeah, we can make a little bit of a difference in the big businesses, but it's going to take a lot more work and be maybe not as fun for me. I mean, there's a lot of people who thrive in that kind of environment and can actually make a lot of difference. But for me, I really wanted to focus in on those small to mid-sized companies. So anywhere from, you know, a few employees to up to the 250, 300, 400, 500 employees. After that, they kind of get into the little bit larger. They have a lot of bureaucracy and the whole bit. And one of the things I wanted to do and like really like the idea of is making work a place where people want to come to, right? Hmm. So right down from the business owner to engaging employees to getting everybody involved in growing and making that business better. And through that, everybody becomes better themselves is kind of the philosophy. And so, you know, it ties in so nice again to the Go-Giver. But essentially, we came up with, there was kind of four core tracks in what we do. And the first one is the strategic part of it. And, you know, from my experience so far in business and from having interacted with lots and lots of business people, most people aren't really thinking from a strategic point of view at a small business level, and even in large businesses. They're more or less reacting to what's going on and trying to take advantage of anything that kind of comes across their way. So we wanted to be able to help businesses get at least a little bit of a strategic focus on what they were trying to do, but not spend so much time on that they're, you know, all of it is just business planning exercises, and then you end up with a 100-page book that ends up on a shelf that nobody ever uses. So we wanted to make it really lean and easy to do a strategy. And then you know, coming back from the software background, there's a lot of talk about, you know, agile software development, and now there's talk about lean business. So we wanted to make it very dynamic. We wanted it to be a working kind of system where you know where you're heading. Now let's start moving towards there in some way, shape, or form as fast as possible. And so that's kind of what it is. It's, you know, strategy right down to what are you going to do today, all the tactics, and then what systems do you need in place. And then, of course, you can't actually execute a business without clients. So otherwise, it's just a hobby, right? So you need that sales and marketing and branding and client service piece. So we've got that in there as well. And then there's, you know, culture is so important to a high-performing business. And yet it's so overlooked, and especially in places like Calgary where when the economy is good, almost anybody can find a job fairly quickly. And so companies tend to hire anybody who can kind of do the job rather than focusing on the people who are best for the company and where it's going and the ones that can actually believe in what they're doing and those sorts of things. So tying those high-performing teams back to your organizational culture, your core values, are you hiring for those things first and foremost, and then finding people who can either learn or have the talents and skills you need, and then keeping them highly trained and motivated and the whole bit. And then the last piece is every business has systems, whether you believe it or not, whether you think you're not a systems or a process person, or as some people say, process, but that's a little private one with Dixie and I. She's always making fun of that. But really coming down to the idea that you have these things, are you going to make them good and serve you, or are you going to serve them, or are you going to be kind of random in how you do things? And so what we want to do is get, you know, employees working on all this stuff as well as the owner, not have it all in one hand, because the people who know how are closest to the work know how to do it the best. They just need potentially the guidance and the authority to actually be able to make those changes. And once they start doing that, once they start getting excited about it, they can actually make a huge difference in a business. And then the business owner can actually get to that dream part where it's they can sit on a beach and in exotic destinations, and you know, they can take 3 or 4 weeks or a month off and come back, and their business is actually further ahead than when they left. And for most business owners, that isn't true. So, you know, and there's lifestyle business owners that are, you know, micropreneurs that are able to pull that off. And I'm talking about the ones where they're actually building an enterprise with lots of employees. And I know a lot that really can't leave for very long. So. And then on top of all that, we've got two specialty tracks. One is how do you get businesses into that high growth mode? Because what got you to startup and early growth is not going to get you to high growth. There's a lot of turmoil that goes in, and actually a whole culture shift, because you're actually going from fast moving, winging it, everybody's just innovating on the fly, to actually having to put more formal systems in place and the whole bit. And that's very hard for a lot of business owners, because it's a different style and not all of them are suited for it. And then we also can do work on the transition side. So if you're selling your business, a lot of the same things apply. You have to get yourself out of the business. You have to put processes and systems in place. You have to get it to the point where if somebody buys it, they're not buying themselves a headache, right? So, that's kind of the tracks that we've got in the Manifest Business Success System, and then we've got a piece of software down at the bottom part of it that we can track all that work. But that's just, now we see it as a tool to enable it. We don't see it as the core piece of it as much.
So really you offer small to mid-sized businesses, you know, the whole package, and that's a proven out system, or a proven out all those tracks. It's from your own experience. It's not just theory, right?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, when we look at all the, you know, the technology background and the software development, and I spent most of my time more on the business analysis side. I was never the coder or anything like that, and project manager. So I was really the person who had to figure out what are we going to be doing and how do we get there. And it really comes down to the same thing in businesses. So and this is another thing, you know, it took me a long time to realize that not everybody thinks the same way as you do, right?
Yeah. That's a problem.
We tend to think people think kind of like us, but just a little bit different.
Yeah.
And you don't realize that some of the things that you find very easy through either the way you were wired or through all your life experience that got you to that point. And one of those things is I can see the interconnectedness of things fairly well now. And so I can see the big picture, and I've got one of my lead developers who's also very good at seeing the big picture and how everything at the same time, we can hold it kind of in our heads and see how it all interacts. And so we can kind of tie all the tactics back into the strategy and then get into the actual plan. So whether it's sales or whether it's people or whether it's some other thing, they're just all problems that need to be broken down and solved is kind of the way we look at it. So,
Doug, it's wild listening to the story and where you are today, you know, and I mean, because you seem like such, well, you are such a soft-spoken man. I believe you used that term yourself earlier.
Yeah.
Yet you have a hair trigger on wit, and you're extremely creative, and you know, and that's where the writing kind of has taken you the last couple of years, let's say. Is that correct? Like writing for the Good Men Project and entrepreneurial, even the Good Men Project. I mean, where did that writing, what's going on inside of you that you're just called to write?
Well, I mean, back when I was in, it's actually a funny thing because in high school and school, English wasn't really my favorite subject at all. I mean, I did it because I had to do it. I was more into the sciences side of things and the math side of things. And I, you know, even band or shops, I preferred that kind of stuff to English. But when I got in my first job in the military, I had a very picky, not really picky, but somebody who had very high standards for writing and that sort of thing. And so what I learned back then was to emulate other people's styles so that I could get my work approved and signed off very quickly. And a lot of people never really figured that out, and they had to rewrite it 10, 20 times before it would get finally approved. By the time I was done there, I could put stuff through on the first try almost in terms of getting it approved, because it wouldn't get, if anything, it would get picked on for something a little bit technical or something like that, but very seldom even there. And then, you know, my writing kind of took a hiatus for a while. And then it's kind of like the thing where, you know, the overnight success is not really an overnight success. I actually wrote about 500 blog posts over a number of years before I started writing for the Good Men Project and stuff like that. And just getting all the great feedback from people like Bob Berg and stuff like that really helped keep me motivated to keep going on that. And then as the voice started getting stronger and the writing probably improved a little bit, at least I'm hoping it has, you know, I started reaching out and going, okay, well, where can I get this more noticed? Where can I get more impact? And how can I get that message out and help and serve and all those sorts of things? So, you know, it varies. Probably a lot of the writing I do is very business focused, but every once in a while there'll be a personal story or something that's just kind of for fun in there. That, and one of the skills I've really gotten is I can take just almost any life situation and then somehow make a business lesson or something out of it at the end of the day. So it's actually kind of fun to do that.
Well, and it's valuable. It's certainly valuable to me, and I'm sure it's valuable to a lot of other people. And it is a gift. I'm not sure if it's a skill but again, you're showing up and you're doing it, you know, on purpose. So that's the value. Anybody listening that's interested in reading any of your blog, doug.manifest.com, correct?
Yeah, that's right.
and all about SunWapta at sunwaptasolutions.com or manifest.com. Is that right?
Yeah, that's correct.
And I might be missed. It's manifest.com.
Yeah, it's manifest. We kind of, when you pronounce a fast, it sounds like fest, but yeah. To brand it, we had to change the E at the end to an A so that we would actually have a unique word that would show up. Really.
Do you want to, we're just about out of time, man. The time goes so fast, Doug. What, do you have anything up your sleeve? Do you have any kind of thing you want to reveal or where are you going? What's up? What are you doing next week or next month? What do you got going on?
Well, over the shorter term, and, you know, I use that term loosely because shorter term, I'm a little bit of an optimist. At the beginning of things, I always think I can pull off things very, very quickly, and they take a little bit longer. But right now, I'm starting to work up with a lot of partners, and we're putting together a lot of training programs. So we've been doing some sales workshops, one-day workshops, and we're going to be doing some marketing workshops. And then we're going to be tackling the rest of the tracks again in our series. But the cool thing is that I'm also bringing in partners that can add some real depth to it. So we're looking at working with somebody who does some leadership and management training. We're working with also on the consulting side. We've lined up partners who can help build out websites and do video and all those kinds of things. Because, again, it comes down to that project management piece is we think that business owners don't want more complications and yet more people they have to figure out how to work with. They're looking for somebody that potentially can help them put it all together and help them get to where they need to go faster. So we're getting back to our roots as, you know, that strategy plus the projects and just getting people from where do you want to go, how do you get there, how do you get there the most efficiently.
That's wild hearing you say that again. Things seem to kind of come full circle as long as we keep showing up and not quitting and trying to bring value and trying to bring value to other people, you know, serve. So, Doug, it's been a joy and a pleasure. I really appreciate you taking time and sharing your wisdom with us and sharing you with us. I certainly know you a lot better than I did an hour ago. And, you know, it's a real joy and it's a real honor as well. I appreciate, you know, the opportunity to call you a friend.
Oh, thank you very much, Todd. It was certainly a pleasure to hear you when you had the show reversed and Dixie was the host and you were the interviewer. So,
yeah, I wasn't. I know how you guys feel now, and it was a little uncomfortable. So I've got to be honest about that. So it was cool that she asked me. It was a real honor there too, getting to know all the people involved with the Go Giver, Bob Berg, Bill Ellis, Dixie, yourself, all the other coaches there. I mean, there's so much, there's huge value there. It's just a nice way to live. You know, it's just doing the next right thing is pretty cool.
And your show is pretty cool too. And I love your perspective on it, that you're not just reiterating, you know, the books or whatever. You're getting behind the person who wrote the books. I really love that. So.
Well, I appreciate it, Doug. And it's really been our pleasure. That's for sure. Thanks so much for joining us. We really appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
There you have it, Mr. Doug Wagner. Manifest now and also SunWapta Solutions. Check it out. They have a complete package for the business owner, people that are looking to grow. And Doug's just a heck of a nice guy. There's no doubt about it. So thanks so much, everybody, for listening to the show. We really appreciate it. We couldn't do it without you. We certainly couldn't do it without Mr. Doug Wagner and all the other guests that have been on and are coming up. You can take us with you. Get over to iTunes. Just search Tremendous Life Radio. You can get to the vault, listen to all the archive shows over at tremendousliferadio.com. Thanks again for tuning in. Until next time, make it a great day.